Welcome to Talking TRM, the Travel Risk Management Podcast. I'm Bex Debman and I'm an independent consultant specialising in ISO 31030. During my transition from corporate travel to travel risk, I met some incredible individuals driving travel risk management forward with passion and expertise. On this podcast, I'm going to chat with them about their stories and hopefully inspire our listeners to start their own travel risk management journey. Hello and welcome to another episode of Talking TRM, the podcast talking all about travel risk management. My name is Travel Risk Bex, and today I'm joined by, and I can honestly say this with 100% certainty, my best friend in travel. This man has been with me from the very beginning. We've never actually worked together in the same company, but we did loiter outside various events as salespeople back in the day, kind of putting our mastermind plan together as to what was wrong with the travel industry and how one day we might be able to shape it. And now look at us. So let me introduce you to David Chappell. Hello, my lovely. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I like the fact that you qualify as my best friend in travel. So just outside of travel, I'm not your best friend, am I?
I'm sorry about that. Yeah, I just have loads of best friends. I've got to basically categorize them. It's just
fine.
The point is, you're the front of the ones in travel. My worky best friend. All right, work though.
Great, I know my place, it's fine, carry on.
It's because Matt's in the other room and he'd be like, what do you mean, David, your best friend? What am I? Got to be qualified, I'm afraid, darling. My dear friend. So I'm not entirely sure how today is going to go because we just keep laughing at each other. So that's we just have too many silly stories. David is a whiz when it comes to all things technology and having a logical brain. I, on the other hand, am creative and out there a little bit with some of my crazy ideas. So I need people to rein me in. We've been friends for a long time. So, David, let's stop me talking and let's get over to you. And please, for everyone listening, can you introduce yourself and what you're doing right now and a bit about what you have done?
Okay, well, I am David Chappell, so that's me. Not to be confused with the American comedian, which is what most hotels in the US seem to do every time I check in. So that's always funny. I am essentially a data and technology dork in travel. That's kind of, I think, the best way to describe me. Data plumber. I like to connect systems. I have held various roles in my career. I was head of technology at Grey Doors Group and a few other exciting things. My love more than anything probably is numbers, the simplicity and purity of numbers, and the fact that you can connect systems and remove the need for rekey. So this travel is a great landscape because it's massively fractured. So there's this real need to try and pass information from one place to another. It's kind of fun doing it in a really sort of dorky and technical way. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Never fun for me being on the other side, just being the person going, can we just make it work, please? Because it's not working and I've got to try and explain this. Whereas you're like, great, let's just turn this on its head and let's try and do it differently. And I think some of the early conversations we used to have. I just want to know, actually, just going back to your comment about the comedian, do you get upgraded? Is there a perk or a benefit to this?
I haven't yet been upgraded for being mistaken for Dave Chappell. But the Americans, it's only in the US, they seem to find it hilarious when I'm checking in. That's always we had Dave Chappell checking in.
You're like, you don't
look a bit like him. It's like, yeah, no, I'm not surprised. As it goes.
There's another
Often
one.
Mistaken in the street.
Oh, I love it. I love it. We've talked long and hard. And I think this is important just for our listeners here, because this is a travel risk management podcast, of course. And this is, you know, you're a little bit of a curveball for us to bring you into this. But there's a reason for it. And you've been a curveball for me in bringing you into various different groups, because the technology piece, everyone just seems to think kind of either sometimes is the travel piece or is in theory the bit that glues it all together. But actually, it often becomes mistaken for the owner of everything as well. And, you know, I've been in so many meetings with corporates over the years where the client has said, you know, my TMC is Concur, for example. So this is the power of technology and its ability to do things right. But I think we've always recognized that there's huge gaps. And some of the conversations we've had over the years, you know, about some of the stuff that you've looked at designing and different roles and just trying to kind of recognize travel for what it actually is, as opposed to this kind of dream of what we think it is and what sort of travel management companies could perhaps sell it as. The reality of that, especially in the sort of technology side, is important. And David is in our group, in our BSI group, but to the where we're developing the standard in travel risk management for the travel service providers. And there was a key reason for that, that I wanted to bring technology into that, is that, you know, we can make all the standards in the world, but if you don't bring technology into the game, if you don't let them know what's going on, how are we actually going to make that work and how are we going to transmit it? Yeah, so I guess that's how I want to hand over in my why to you today, is to sort of give you this platform to really kind of have a conversation platform. You see, God, just awful technology link, terrible. Sorry.
I've got a pen to go pontificating from.
Goodness me. That's the level I'm dealing with when you're talking to me about it. I really want to give you this sort of space to kind of talk about why travel risk management fits into this technology piece and why it is absolutely essential that perhaps we change our way of thinking about how all this works together. So what is your why for wanting to be involved in this, David?
Well, I think you kind of touched on it right at the beginning of that section there, is that technology is not, you know, technology is not the owner, it's the conduit. Technology, in my perspective, certainly in traveling, I've held various roles in travel. I started as an agent and eventually wheedled my way through. I started at Dialaflight, so I learned, you know, to be able to, I don't know if anyone from Dialaflight is going to watch this, but basically blag my way through my career. So it's founded on a lot of good spiel. But, you know, the technology is not the owner, it's an enabler, right? It's the ability to be able to present content, to be able to make systems talk to each other. But ultimately, the actual ownership of TRM is really the suppliers. It's about the end customers and the corporates. It's not about the technology that they use. So when people say that, you know, Kinder is my TMC, actually, you know, well, it's a very large, I was going to say sophisticated, but I thought we'll just go with large booking platform with an expense tool attached and all the rest of it. But fundamentally, it doesn't make you safe. The technology, you know, there are gaps in the way that travel systems talk to each other, which are, you know, certainly over the last 5 years and the rising advent of API connectivity in this market, something that's been around in other markets for much longer, is allowing systems to be more cohesive, to be more of a, if my analogy is a patchwork quilt. So you have a travel system inside of a TMC, for example. The different systems are the panels and the way they stitch together, the stitching between the panels of the APIs. Those are the pieces that hold the whole picture, the whole quilt together. So if you think of it that way, really the technology stitching everything together so that you're able to move from, you know, have this overall piece. And it's really very, very important, you know, not just from an efficiency point of view inside of agency, which is probably where more of my background comes from, because, you know, being technology in TMC, you spend a lot of time trying to, you know, make things slicker, quicker, faster, easier. But actually, you know, it's about being able to communicate between the systems and making sure the systems are receiving the right pieces of information to be able to then, you know, do the things that they need to do. And ultimately, if you're able to collate and hold data sets in the right way and be able to perform actions on them, then you can also surrender that information up into vehicles like risk management. And I think that's where you come into this world, where technology is the enabler to help these kinds of standards become realities, because otherwise they're quite non-corporeal, they're sort of slightly abstract things, when actually you need to try and have some kind of practical implementation of actually what it means so that you can then have an effect on the real world.
Agreed. And I think one of the things that 31030 talks about it, well, what people talk about it who have read it, is that actually it's quite an accessible standard. It's kind of written almost in kind of commonplace language, but there's a big but as I've started working with it. It makes an assumption that you have an understanding of what you're actually, what you've got now, i.e. as a corporate, you know what your travel program is, you know why you're traveling, where you're going and all that kind of stuff. And the actual truth of it is it doesn't really matter kind of what size company you are, and probably the bigger you are, the worse it gets for you, is that you've outsourced this for so long that you actually believe that, you just don't know. You're completely reliant on the technology that you're using, the data that's sitting behind that, and the suppliers that you're using to run it, to run your program. And that's a really, really big gap for us when we're trying to talk to corporates, to sort of say, well, you know, you need to actually write down all this stuff. You know, you need to own your program. And I think one of the big areas that we talk about is understanding your vendors, and actually that you have the responsibility to your vendors, not the other way around. So you need to be putting your market stall out and understanding what it is you need from your vendors. And the only way you do that is if you own the program. So we're stuck in this really weird place at the moment to move this whole piece forward, where corporates are completely reliant, but the vendors aren't necessarily asking the right questions or collecting the right data right now. But the answer lies in technology.
Yeah, it's a big but, right? And I like big buts, and I can't lie. But you know, this is about the I hate the word reimagining, because it kind of likes this sort of,
I talk about it all the time, but it's right, I know,
but, you know, but it is this realignment of a industry, and a not even industry, it's a practice of this conception of what risk is, and a realignment of the priorities of corporate, and then obviously downstream from that the supply chain that has to support that. And it's everything from, I mean, the pandemic, you know, highlighted and accelerated, I think, trends that were already present, and brought us to a place where you're looking at what would be, I mean, the whole concept of traditional risk has changed. I think that's kind of part of why it accelerated so much through the pandemic, where you have what would be considered a traditionally risky program. Let's say, just from a pure corporate purchasing point of view, you might be traveling to, I don't know, West African oil fields is a good example of where you would need to typically have some kind of risk mitigation. You know, if someone got, I don't know, got hurt on a rig, or if they were kidnapped, or, you know, something like that, something catastrophic. And that's, you know, where, you know, traditional risk would be expected. But I think what the pandemic taught us, and probably what it accelerated, is that actually risk is not as obvious as that, perhaps. And certainly now, I mean, if I think back to when I was at Grey Doors, they had some larger fashion customers. I think LVMH Group, I can probably say it now. I mean, it's probably well known that they're customers. But they had a lot of people in Paris when the Bataclan attack happened. And, you know, Paris traditionally is, you know, it's a pretty risk-free area compared to, let's say, Ouagadougou, just for example. And then you have this change, this flip around, potentially viral health risk, you know, that's to say with the pandemic, that certainly accelerated. You know, now it was risky just to go to, you know, just to go to Bognor, let alone to go to, you know, Belgrade. So it's like the whole perception of what risk is has been massively highlighted and therefore accelerated. And where, you know, I remember doing RFPs, you know, 5 years ago for TMCs, where top of the list would be, what's your fees? What's your 3% that sits on top, you know? And then after that, it'll be what are the actual fares that you can get hold of, you know? And that's kind of where purchasing managers would be really looking at trying to drive a program. And of course, pricing is still very, very important. But we now see that risk and sustainability, of course, alongside it, coming in as primary purchasing factors, and actually trying to be decision factors prior to the point of sale. Whereas before, there typically have been reporting factors, where you go back to your agency and say, right, how many people did we have flying to West Africa? And that's not to demonize West Africa, of course, but just for this example, how many people got flying to this area in a given period? So I can put that in a spreadsheet and give it to my insurers, and we can work out what our insurance risk is. Whereas now, I think I've certainly seen this talking to travel managers over the last year, that there is now a desire to have risk and sustainability as decision factors. So is the risk of my travel to this place acceptable as a business for the traveler to go? And if it is acceptable, are there then mitigations that I need to put in place to ensure that if the risk of that area is higher than, you know, low, or if there is risk in that? So if it's acceptable to go and there is risk there, what structures do I have in place to really mitigate that and make sure that the traveler is okay? So it is an entire subject that I think is being reworked, is being realigned inside of the industry around how you not only access and assess risk, but then how you mitigate and how you act upon it, and how those two things then tie back into the whole corporate responsibility towards your travelers.
Not sure where to start with implementing a standard such as ISO 31030? A gap analysis exercise from Ascent Risk Management is the best place to start. Our expert consultants will take you step by step through your chosen standard and highlight any weak areas. This can be conducted remotely, and the results of the gap analysis can form the plan for your targeted project. Contact Ascent today at www.ascent1, which is ASSENT1.com, and book in your gap analysis today.
And does it make, and I just want to, I've been itching to say this as you've been talking, so I'm just, does it make the, where is the chip? And this isn't down, this is not a down on TMCs at all. Like, it's just to kind of understand that this idea of duty of care solution selling that's been going on for many, many, many years, does this actually open up the floor for a microservices conversation, David? Something that we love and talk about a lot. Because really, if we're looking at the whole travel landscape from sort of concept of should I even be going on this trip, all the way through to how I report on it and how I make sure that I'm bringing that back into my cycle, into my risk management cycle at the end, that's not the world of the TMC alone, is it? There's many, many other factors there.
No, I mean, there's many layers to it, of course. And I think it's an interesting conversation, because there's lots of different pieces inside of that whole cycle of which bits and where is the responsibility. I mean, if you look back 10 years ago, let's say, back into sort of the, you know, what would have been like ISOs and your sort of traditional risk providers that sit inside of the industry. And that, again, is not to say that they are in any way legacy, you know, but the typical way for an agency to populate those platforms or those providers was to queue something off the GDS. So you'd be looking to put something in a PNR, like if whatever the flight segment or the hotel was, and put it on a queue, and then that would then be consumed. And that was, as far as the TMC was concerned, risk done, risk managed, reporter-wise, mischief managed. Whereas I think this is an open conversation. Where's the line of actually ownership in terms of the risk management piece, and how involved does the agency want to be in that? Because I was tech director at Fellow when there was the shootings in Nairobi, and one of the travelers that was booked there, one of the clients, was killed very tragically in that attack. But it's not the agency's job to call the family members or to engage in the emergency response to that. Where is that line, and where in that risk cycle in terms of responsibility do they sit? And, you know, I don't think clearly in that instance you're not going to phone up the widow of someone who's passed away. That's not the job of the agent. There is another structure for that. But in that same conversation, there's clearly a place between those two extremes of sticking something on a queue and telling someone that their partner's been shot dead, that there is a line. Where does the responsibility end? And I think we're still trying to figure out what that is and how do you evolve that. So I think there's plenty of space for conversation around it. And just even in that one instance, you know, there's so much more that sits around that then, because, you know, the agent that booked the flight was in tears, and, you know, there's all this sort of human piece that sits around that. You know, there's lots of wellness that needs to be considered from a personal point of view, not just in the corporates, but in the agency side as well. So there's lots of conversation to have there, I think.
I completely agree. And I think, and this is where the technology being the answer to all kind of rhetoric is, where again we get it wrong, you know, and I think we've done this again and again and again in our industry.
It's the enabler.
It supports it. You're not going to put it in and it's suddenly going to make everything right. Like, you have some work to be done to understand what the risks are, what your risk appetite is to that actually as a business. You know, businesses are still actually understanding what that even means. Mm-hmm. And then being able to write it down and kind of put it into travel. I think it's a really exciting time, which is why I wanted to bring you into this conversation.
I mean, it is, as I said, my entire ethos around technology is that it's an enabler. Having been an agent and sat on the sharp end for the best part of 10 years making bookings, I do truly believe that from an agency perspective, that people are the correct interface. However, it is the technology that sits behind them that enables those people to be efficient and more effective and more able and more capable. And, you know, that's been my career for the last 10 years, is to try and build those kinds of environments and be part of that. And I think that there's plenty of space still to go in terms of stitching stuff together. And it's a continually changing landscape, because certainly as the technology inside of the travel industry continues to fracture, and it does, you know, if you go back to the late 90s, you could arguably say that most content lived in the GDS, that it was almost a single portal of truth. But post 2000, 2001, Martha Lane Fox, lastminute.com was the beginnings, the first knockings, the arrival of EasyJet. Ever since then, the single window of truth is not a thing, however people may wish to believe that it is. There's this continual fracturing of landscape, this continual disaggregation, and the desire of the suppliers to communicate directly with customers and to understand who their customers are, and maybe not have them hidden behind the layer of the agency name. And this then gives rise into a whole pile of other conversations around who owns a customer. Now, for me personally, nobody owns a customer. A customer makes their choices. And if the program isn't suitable for the customer, or if the constraints of the program are too constrictive, then the customer will typically leak and go and do something else. Because ultimately, people, I believe this, people and agents are like water. They will follow the easiest path, ultimately. And if you need to constrain and push them at the right points to get them into the right places. You know, as an agent, you know, if there was a way that I could do something quicker and it was slightly subversive, but it meant I could knock 5 minutes off a booking, then I would do that, because I knew that if I did that 10 times in a day, I'd get another two bookings in and I'd make more money. And that was, you know, and that's the sum total of it for me anyway. But, you know, people are like water. They do follow the easier path, ultimately. And it's about providing an environment that is effective, but is also easy to use and is accessible. And as the landscape continues to fracture, so as you look at suppliers looking to distribute their content directly, every time that happens, it adds a layer of complexity into the overarching picture of trying to aggregate the ideas of the data of what people are doing, because you've just got another place to get information from. And this is why the sort of the API landscape, and particularly having top level aggregators in each vertical, you know, so a good example of someone who is doing great things in a currently what was more unmanaged space is someone like the provider Journey. Now Dan Price runs that business.
Yeah, Danny's actually done one of these.
And I love Dan. He's a great guy. But what I really like about what he's doing is he's taking a part of the travel cycle, this last mile, which has typically been completely unmanaged or actually very difficult for an agent to do effectively, because you might have Blacklane in one place and, you know, maybe another provider somewhere else. But when you go into the smaller destinations where they're not present, then it's this kind of gap. And Dan's starting to stitch all of that together through a platform that aggregates and allows you to get to it in one place, but also then to connect it up and report it. And those kinds of technologies that are using APIs to call out into all the different technology providers, I think are very, very important in the space that we're working in now, because as the providers look to supply directly, because they can, they can lower the distribution costs ultimately if they can talk directly to the customers. And again, NDC is a great example of this inside of the airline industry, where whatever they're talking about in terms of, you know, the airlines done a great job in pitching it that it's, you know, it's all about content and being able to, you know, distribute and put new seats on an aircraft and have micro pricing and all the rest of it. And that's obviously true, but there's also a massive layer of cost that's involved in distributing through the GDS. And I don't have time to mention the fact that doing it directly with the customer is cheaper for them. But, you know, that driver to distribute directly, whether it's for ownership of the customer, whether it's for the the cost effectiveness of distributing directly, or whether it's for the fact that you want to then be able to manage your inventory in a single place. And that obviously is one of the key drivers for NDC, so airlines can manage something once and have it on their website and have it to their agents without having to do stuff through ATPCO and so on. But that type of disaggregation every time that happens, you know, it becomes more and more important that people are able to pull it back together again and be able to give environments that allow people to access content. But I think, you know, the more that that happens, that these distribution channels continue to disaggregate, the more we need technology to provide the solutions for people to be able to access content. But will technology itself solve risk? No, of course not, because risk is something that's inherent in daily life and changes as global events change, whether it's a volcano exploding in Papua New Guinea, or whether it's, you know, a terrorist attack in Boston, or whether it's a, you know, the late next piece of pestilence or plague that's going to come across the world. These are world events, and technology won't solve those. But what it will do is it's going to give the structure and the capability to be able to manage those things as they come forward. And I think that right now is the bit that's really missing, is that we've got this concept and we've got this desire, but we don't yet have a truly practical implementation of how you can actually activate that.
And even and for those that do think they've got it, and I think this is exactly what I wanted to get at, so thank you for talking about some of those things that you just picked up on, is that, you know, that we think we've got it. So there's a TMC, and I'm dealing with a corporate right now today, global corporate, working with a global TMC, working with a global insurance company who have provided a global assistance company. The reality of that is they're not available in every country in the world. So this solution that they think they've got out of the box, they haven't. And I think this is something that's just really important with how technology is marketed. And we talk about this again and again about travel risk management. It's about scratching below the surface. It's about really not just going, oh, thanks, yeah, I've got that. It's about understanding how it works, where it's not working, and then allowing something to fill in the gaps, which tech can argue. But equally, and I think this is one of the biggest headaches for most corporates who are rolling out any form of technology, it's the implementation process, right? It's about getting it out and getting it live. But in order for you to do that, you have to understand what it is you're rolling out in the first place. And I don't mean the piece of tech, I mean the problem you're trying to solve. You don't understand what it is you're trying to do, then no piece of technology in the world is going to work in the way that you need it to work. Then you're going to get frustrated with it. It's going to cause you more issues. There's a whole piece that happens that to allow technology to become the enabler that I don't think often people spend enough time in, because they just want the solution. They just want it done.
And I agree. I think there's I think that the days of cue it off in the GDS, tick box, risk done, I think those days are over. Yeah. I don't think that is a, don't get me wrong, it's not that it doesn't provide risk management. It's not that that does not work anymore, but it is no longer the only or the total global solution that it was considered to be, which it never was in the first place, but it managed a certain subset. And I think now what we're seeing is that there's a recognition that this is a wider piece of work and that it touches more things than just per se traveler in destination. And I think that's where we go back to that realignment, that reimagining, where people are now really starting to understand that actually this touches more than just those traditional. I mean, the word legacy is used a lot, and it's a very unkind word, because it has this feeling that legacy should no longer be around. And I think that's kind of the underlying connotation of legacy. But I think something that has been traditionally used in the way that it has, it's kind of like looking at a window, right? A window, and the curtains are partially drawn. This has been, you know, risk management up until now, and what we've done is that, and now we're like, oh, okay, actually, oh, wow. What I'm seeing is that there's a lot more out there. The curtain, you know, there's this bigger picture, and it's a path of education. It's about getting people to understand what that is. That in itself, whilst it's more, it's not necessarily scary, because there are things in place and there are people to talk to, and there's structures like the new ISO that are looking to try and address this. But understanding that there's more there isn't necessarily a bad thing, you know. And I think this is, again, the concept of change and the the idea that something has become greater does not necessarily make it worse. What it does is it makes it more responsible. And I think that that's a really, really important point to try and get hold of, is that the world has always been a dangerous place, fundamentally. And you go back through history, there's always been war, plague and pestilence. And whilst what we see today in terms of risk evolves in terms of its mode, the risk has always been there. But what we're doing now is we're trying to embrace that as a larger, more holistic view of what risk actually is across an organization. And I think that that's a really, you know, again, it comes, you can ask as many, you can send as many API calls as you like down an API to pull back risk information about a country or a thing, but it means nothing unless you then have a structure to implement action based on that information, because ultimately the decision factors still come back to people. Sure, you can have a red light, amber light, green light kind of structure, and yeah, I'm not going to go there because it's risk category 5 because someone showed their bottom in the middle of the supermarket or whatever the risk might be. But you know, I think there's, it's so much more nuanced than that. There's so many more things to now consider that can hold decision factors and be, you know, everything from literal risk in destination right the way through to traveler well-being, health, mental well-being. How many times have they traveled in a year? Is that good for them and their family and time away? And all of those pieces need to be part of the consideration about how employees are considered by their employers.
100%. And I think this is where we've always sort of sat together with all of this, that bring the people back into this, because they're the ones doing it. And this is so, it's so specific with travel, you know, it's the travelers, it's the guys and the girls on the road dealing with this on a daily basis. Those are the people that you need to protect, not like lines on the spreadsheet where we're just trying to work out costs and protect. And I think that's what this standard does. So David, I'm really conscious of time. Our listeners are wonderful, I hope, because I think they listen to everything all the way to the end. I've once promised that I do these in 15 minutes. I never had any intention of ever doing that.
I've never had a conversation with you, Bex, that has lasted 15 minutes. I've never had that conversation.
But I want to just, there's so many other things that we could talk about. I mean, David, maybe we bring you back on and we actually start diving into some of the stuff around the risks around OBTs, the risks around some of the platforms, sure, and how. But another session, and I'd love to invite you back to really sort of dive deeper into some of this stuff. But for now, our listeners are potentially looking at travel solutions. They're looking at the technology solutions to help them with this piece. They are looking at maybe running RFPs for an OBT, for a reporting tool, for whatever it is in the piece. Can you give us just a couple of golden nuggets of advice from an expert in this space to sort of how they would begin to scratch below the surface to find out maybe a bit more that they need to find out?
Well, I think where we are today with the technologies around risk, more than anything, is that there aren't fundamental structures to present information. So when we talk about OBTs, for example, you can't really go to any of the corporate OBTs that are out there, Citric or Atris or, you know, or KDS or whatever it might be, Concur, that are able to present risk category. Can I filter by it? Can I sort by it? That's not really a thing right now. There may be people who are doing it that I'm not aware of, so forgive me if you happen to watch this and you are. But for me, probably the most important piece is around data return as much as anything. You know, can I get the information out of the system of my activity or get that from my connected partner, the TMC per se? Because if you can get to your numbers, then at least you can understand the scope of your activity. And that's as much as important as anything, because that will allow you to start to frame the overarching conversation of actually, you know, where do we go? Who's involved? How many times? And they sound like simple things, but if you don't have easy access to that, if that's not something that you're able to get hold of easily, actually, then when you want to look at that, that becomes onerous. And anything that's onerous is typically, certainly talking to me, kind of gets put down to the bottom of the pile. Oh, I'll do this shiny, easy thing over here first, and the onerous thing I might kick down the road until the end of the week. And you can easily find that gets kicked down the road till 6 months' time. So I would certainly be looking at platforms that you can get hold of your numbers. And then from OBT point of view, you'd be looking for things that have good wide access to content, but I think that's a whole other conversation.
It really is, because there's a whole conversation around travel risk management and content. And is there a conversation to go, David, you're coming back on without
okay
out. I just I'm just conscious that, you know, people don't want, goodness knows what they're doing when they're listening to this. And I hope that it's always interesting for them, but I don't want to go on for an extra 40 minutes because I am aware that we do short bites and that's the idea. But I think it's really, I really would like to explore that with you and dive deeper into that because
happy
I think
to. Yeah, of course.
This is where it's missing at the moment. And I know that you're the guy to think about that in a very different way because of the chats we've had over the years.
Practical implementation. I'm a tech guy, right? I spend most of my time in theory land. That's where I like to live, where things can happen because you can see how it can happen. But I'm also a pragmatist. You need to have a practical application, a practical implementation of these things. And, you know, it doesn't have to be everything all at once. You know, you're going to go from 0 to 100, you know, in a fraction of a second to have suddenly a million different pipes containing risk information that allow me to sort and filter and all the rest of it. This is going to be a phased process. You know, even if day one, we can have a minimum viable product coming into some of these tools to allow people to be able to assess risk at the point of sale, then I think that would be a very good first step. And I think there's lots of stuff to talk around that. But yeah, even in the first instance, if we go right back to the beginning of this conversation and the concept of this reimagining, this realignment of risk, getting people to understand that this conceptually is not changed. What it has done is widened. And I think that's if you can walk away from that, from this conversation just with that piece, then I think that's as much as anything we can do.
I agree. I'm constantly told that when I go in to see a client, they thought it was something and now suddenly it's much bigger than what they thought it was. But I'm doing is opening the curtains. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. It's just that we think there's some shiny thing that's going to fix it all. And there's a bit of work that has to happen behind the scenes to make that work.
So it is like the Wizard of Oz. You pull back the curtain and there's just a guy behind it pulling a lever going, oh, it's going to be all right.
It never could be more like that, could it? It really, and that's the GDS. Welcome. And on that note, look, thank you, David. You've been incredible, as I knew you would do. Thank you for our listeners for carrying on and listening. Tell me what else you want to speak to me about with David, because actually he is a fountain of knowledge and we can really do some deep diving into some of this stuff with him. David, thank you so much for your time today. We could talk hours about this. You've been listening today to Talking TRM with Travel Respects and my special guest, David Chappelle. Until the next time, see you soon.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Talking TRM is in association with Ascent Risk Management. If you enjoyed listening to today's podcast, please subscribe and make sure to leave a review. If you need any help with implementing an ISO standard, such as ISO 31 or 30, or if you have any questions regarding ISO, please reach out to Ascent Risk Management to talk to our expert consultants today. We can be found at www.ascent1.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, and links can be found in the show description. This podcast is a Clemark Studio production and was produced by Jessica Ingalls.